ear, piece on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solid game. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up. Everybody say, grab your GPS and get up on your Segway. Nerd up. It's a way of the world. No matter where you are, you got a 4G signal.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson. Nerd
Up. All right, once again, welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, along with...
Eric Billingsley.
And looks like we tried to get a hold of Tim, but he was unreachable. So I guess that's a good way to put that. Tim Matson, though, he'll be a part of this podcast. He and I attended a showing of the movie Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. I recorded a little review right after the movie with him, so he'll be joining us, but just a little bit later. So, but Eric, you and I, we can handle it, right?
We sure can.
Well, we'll start out. First of all, here's a recap, or a pre-cap, actually, of what we're going to be talking about. First of all, we'll be talking about, of course, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. I'm also going to talk about Tammy. That'll be a brief one. And then we're going to talk about a couple television shows that, have struck our interest in some way or another. And finally, we'll close out with some big news in comic books this week. And we'll save it for the end of the podcast so you can hear that. Eric, first of all, you saw Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And Tim Matson and I saw it together, and we recorded a review right after the theater because he had to get back home. It was interesting. While he's not going to be a part of the podcast, you'll still be able to hear his review coming up. But since we got ours together, go ahead and let us know what you thought of Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
All right. Well, briefly, I absolutely loved it. I'd been hearing really positive things about it. Here's the thing is, when I was little, I was a huge Planet of the Apes fan. I had the Planet of the Apes playset. I had a Planet of the Apes trash can. I had Planet of the Apes drapes. I'm not kidding you. I was like 8 or 10 years old, and I was just ape. Ape over Planet of the Apes.
Well, I'm with you. I had the Mego dolls too. I loved the TV series, the movies, everything to do with Planet of the Apes. Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I'm not sure why it appealed to me so much as a kid. In later years, I've gone back to watch them, and the first one I still love, but the other ones have lost a lot of, I loved them all dearly when I was little, but it's only the first one that really has maintained any strength with me on rewatches, as I've gotten older. I still enjoy watching them, but they're not, they've lost something over the years. So, when the Marky Mark, Tim Burton came out, I was very, very excited, and I was, went to the cinema, and I was just, very disappointed, as pretty much everyone was. It's been a long time since I saw it. I can't really put my finger on exactly what went wrong with it, but it just didn't appeal to me. It just wasn't very good. And then, years later, I heard that they were doing, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and I didn't go see it. I thought it was going to be a sequel to the Marky Mark movie, and I was like, the first one wasn't very good. I don't think there's much hope for the sequel. Yeah. And I still am not really sure if it connects at all to that Tim Burton movie or not. Nah, I'm assuming not.
I don't think so. I can't see any relation to them.
Yeah, so I guess this is considered to be the second reboot of the series then, because the first reboot, I guess, just crashed and burned. So anyway, Rise of the Planet of the Apes came out. I didn't go see it, and it got all this critical praise. So when it came out on Blu-ray, I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to give this a chance, and I loved it. I was like, wow, this is not what I was expecting at all. I'm also not generally a big James Franco fan.
Yeah.
I like the guy as a. I think he's very intelligent, and when you hear him talk, he's very well read, but. And a lot of the roles, I just am not real impressed with his performances. Well, he was perfectly fine in this. I'm not going to say he was great, but I mean, I didn't have any problems with his performance. But the writing, the script was really well done, and I was very engaged in the story of, of this chimp Caesar and his altercation and a development as an intelligent ape or chimpanzee, I guess.
Right.
So I was very happy with that one. So when they announced that they were doing a sequel, I was all fired up. I was like, okay, this one I'm going to go see in the theater. And, you know, as they were releasing early versions to be reviewed, the reviews started coming in and they were saying that as good as the first one was, this one's even better. So my expectations were very, very high.
I got to say, real quick here, I didn't see the one with James Franco for the reason you said you didn't want to at first, because I thought, is this related to that one? And this is going to be horrible. I don't want him to ruin my childhood memory of how awesome the Planet of the Apes were. And I never saw the first one. But I will say this, seeing the second one, you didn't need to see the first one. They really did some great job of backstory. So anyway, go ahead now.
That's true. But if you did like the second one, I would encourage you to go back and watch it. There's no major plot points there that you don't already know, but it's a lot of the nuances and that relationship between Franco and the chimp. There's some really good other performances in the film as well. It just fleshes the whole story out, the backstory out a little bit more, and it gives. You feel like you know Caesar a little bit more than you do if you just go into the second movie straight away. But okay. It is definitely not required. You can go in and watch Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and without having seen Rise, and you're not going to feel like you're missing anything. And you really aren't as far as plot goes. So my expectations were super high, and I got to say it at least met, if not exceeded them. One thing that is absolutely extraordinary, and I mean it's just like a massive leap forward, is the visual effects in this film.
Yes.
I'm someone who I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan, and I remember when I first laid eyes on Gollum, I was amazed at how far CGI had come. And I've always been very critical of CGI because most of the time it looks very fake. Mm-hmm. It stands out from, it's very easy to spy CGI in a lot of films, and it's just not done well. And if you can't do it to the degree that it was done in Lord of the Rings and now in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, just don't even do it. You know, if you're not going to do it right, don't do it. Well, they did it right. Unbelievably so in this film. And if this film doesn't sweep every visual effects category in the Oscars, then someone's getting paid off, because there's no film that's come out this year that will come out this year that is going to be anywhere near the level of intricate, detailed special effects that looks perfectly natural that they did with these apes. The expressions on their faces, just every little detail, every little nuance, the fur, everything looks 100% real. And it's just amazing. I mean, I was just blown away by this. And you really, early in the film, and this is the Apes film, and there's been some, some criticism, which I think that Tim had some criticism about the human characters not being fully fleshed out. But and that, I can't argue that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not the humans' film. It the apes are on screen like three quarters of the time.
Right.
The humans functionally have to be there, and I felt like they were developed as much as they need to be in this film. But I suppose that could be argued. But it really is the apes film, and you come very early to understand the characters and to develop feelings for these characters. Even the Koba, who's the kind of the heavy on the ape side. Mm-hmm. I felt myself even sympathetic to his character up to a point. I don't want to go into spoiler territory.
Yeah, it's hard to keep from spoilers, but yeah.
Yeah. But it is a very, very good film, and I highly recommend it to anyone who has a passing interest in this franchise.
Yeah.
It's very well done. I mean, this is not a, let's make a quick buck. Some real artistry went into this, some real thought. And the script is actually a loose retelling of Julius Caesar by William Shakespeare. And I say loose, you're not going to find the apes delivering any soliloquies in this. but the storyline is there and recognizable if you're looking for it. And maybe it's an obvious thing because the chimp's name is Caesar, but he was named Caesar in the last movie, and there were no ties, as far as I know, to Julius Caesar in that first film.
Right.
I don't know if they were always intending to make this the second one a Julius Caesar adaptation, or if maybe when they were after the first one was over and done with, The screenwriter sat down and said, well, the chimp's named Caesar. Let's see what we can do about melding this with Julius Caesar. I had no idea. I'd be curious to know. But in any case, they did an amazing job with it, and the story fits absolutely perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I'll just stop there. But I mean, I was just really very much impressed with it,
you know,
and highly recommended.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. I love the movie, and okay, I mean, it's hard to take out the human parts in it. I mean, that's needed. And yeah, there. Again, I'll have to agree with Tim Matson. When you hear his review, you'll hear him say that the humans, he had no empathy for any of the humans. But given, just look at the ape story told in this movie alone. That was just, it was so well done. And the compare and contrast, if you will, between humans and apes, and throughout the whole movie is just phenomenal. I think there's a story to be told there, and they did it. I thought they did it well. Special effects, extremely well. So yeah, I'm with you on it. So but you know, Tim Matson, the super critic, we're gonna get him a cape, but I think he's already got one, but he'll have more to say. In fact, let's go ahead and do that right now. Let's hear what Tim has to say about it.
Wow, Tim couldn't be on the actual podcast, but
he shows up in my backyard.
I'm here in spirit.
So Tim, I drug you to a movie. You wouldn't see Transformers with me.
Good Lord. And yet we still can't escape the reach of Michael Bay. We were still inflicted with that damn Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie.
Oh, I know. Saw the trailer of that and we're like,
oh,
no.
God.
And what was the one after that?
The Kingsman.
The Kingsman.
Which I hold is a better movie than that trailer, actually.
you said is so that's some Michael Bay edits,
oh,
on that trailer.
Oh, my God. I swear to God, the last trailer I saw for that was not all quick cuts, mm-hmm, that made it completely incomprehensible. This was strictly from the Michael Bay school of filmmaking.
Yeah.
It was unfollowable.
Well, like I told you, I think the only thing, the reason they had it like that is because it followed a Turtles preview.
Oh, good Lord.
So, but I'd never even heard of that one. So Kingsman's one on my list, though. It looked intriguing enough, and you say it's a better trailer than the other one, so I have to look for it.
Well,
now,
it's got Michael Caine. Where else would you,
right,
what else do you want?
Right.
I mean, you know, Colin Firth and Sam, yeah, Jackson.
Oh, yeah, Sam Jackson.
And,
when
you know,
I saw him, it's
so
like,
there,
that's it.
And was it Stanley Tucci?
Is, yeah.
It? Yeah, so it's got some quality acting in it.
But Stanley Tucci was in Transformers?
Well, you know. Everybody's got to pay for that third house or whatever, I guess.
I'm telling you, one of these days you're going to have to see it. But tonight we saw Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And
Dawn of the War of the Planet of the Apes.
Well, see, that's the thing. I'm wondering because, okay, now, I talked about this on our chat. One of the things, I love the original movie series.
I agree.
And it was just beautifully done. Story was great. Sure, the special effects weren't where they are now.
Those are some styling rubber masks they had.
They had. And they were great for what the time, you know. The Roddy McDowall could make facial expressions using those rubber masks that you wouldn't expect.
That is true. Actually, he managed to get a lot of emotion through all that rubber stuck to his face.
Yeah. So for the time, they were really great movies, and they hold up now. I think so. I watch them now, and it's still, you got that humanity destroying itself going through the whole line of the movies.
Well, there's a lot to be said for a strong story.
Yeah. And the thing is, it was told in a different manner to what they're trying to do now. It was told from end to beginning. You know, they did the
True.
First series where they went and saw what happened, and then each one gradually went back in time a little bit. And I like the way they did that. It was almost, it was like, well, you know what's going to happen. Here's why, you know.
I also don't know the running time of the original movie, but I would almost bet it's about an hour shorter than this one.
Yes. What was the length of this one? Like hours?
I don't know, but I got to say, the more that movie went on, oh, man. My thought was, never has there been a movie that doesn't have enough time to tell the story it needs to tell, but still feels like it goes on for ever.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, I'll tell you what, though. Anymore, especially action movies, and they're becoming longer and longer anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you go see any movie today, like, well, even Captain America was almost
We
two
call
hours.
That Peter Jackson syndrome.
Is that what,
yeah,
it is?
That's,
okay.
That's the technical term for
that
it.
That is about when it started? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, I'd agree with that. So, well, yeah, being a long movie, though, and being that they're telling the story now with the relaunch, we'll go back to the James Franco movie. We won't go back, mm-hmm, to that Mark Wahlberg thing.
No, there's no need for anybody to go back to that.
No, that was a mess. But James Franco, The Rise, I never saw that one. But after watching this, this is the second time I've seen this movie, but still on the first time, I didn't have to. They had enough backstory told in the opening credits,
mm-hmm.
and even through the story, they worked it in about a little bit here and there about what happened. So it was really nice that I didn't have to see the first one.
I agree. They even had that special room that contained the first movie in it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So, essentially.
Yeah, and then, you know, it really, it's one of those, it's a standalone movie. But they're not telling it in order. Like they should have. I don't know, maybe. But they're going in forward order, like the story starts and has an ending. And maybe they're going to bring it to a different ending. After all, it's based on these... I forgot the name of the people that wrote it, but it's based on the characters they created, not the original French book.
Mm-hmm.
So it's they may be going somewhere else with it anyway.
That is interesting. I didn't realize until you guys had said that on the podcast that the movies are in opposite order yeah. of the originals. I didn't connect.
If you watch them, and now there are a couple thrown in, like I think Beneath the Planet of the Apes is one that it's kind of off kilter.
That's pretty forgettable.
Yeah, and there's actually a moment in this one where they are in the subway area and they have that big hole. I kept thinking.
I thought about that too. I'm like, wait a minute.
Where's a nuclear weapon on this one? So yeah, they did play homage to the originals and maybe just that scenery. And also going through the BART, it wasn't the subway in New York, it was the BART in San Francisco, going through the subway system. Also, the music, and I kind of remarked to you at the end of the movie, mm-hmm. they paid homage. I love that word.
Homage.
It's French. So, anyway.
I feel very smart when I say it. Homage.
And I twist my pencil-thin mustache. Mm-hmm. But they did pay tribute to the original music mm-hmm. in a lot of sequences. And overall, I thought... That just the hints that say, hey, we know that we're remaking this story,
mm-hmm.
and that, you know, they didn't leave out the originals. However, Roddy McDowall and Charlton Heston didn't make any cameos. So,
although I'm going to say it's shots fired, it was the blandest possible way to remake that movie ever. I got to say that movie was super dull.
Oh, really?
I have to say it was not entertaining. I did not find any human in this film engaging in any way, shape, or form.
I didn't. Now I'll agree with you.
Not
on that.
In the least. That was the blandest bunch of bland people that they could have found.
Well,
could have found, unless they cast a bunch of Amish people.
They're not listening to the podcast.
Yeah, well,
the Amish.
They don't have electricity. I suspect they probably are.
Okay, good. Well, I would agree with you. You're absolutely right in that. Not a single human. Grab my attention, keep it. And especially, and this guy, the one that fires the shots, the one that calls himself an asshole, he was from the TV series Fringe.
Kirk Acevedo.
That's him. That's his name.
I thought he was fantastic in Fringe.
Yeah.
I thought he was an amazing part of that show. And I was really bummed when I thought he was, spoilers, when I thought he was leaving that show and got killed. but if you haven't watched Fringe, go watch Fringe. It's cool.
Oh, God's best show.
But he just really... I don't know. He didn't really bring a lot to this film.
No.
I expected a lot more out of it. I got to say, if you sit down at your table, wherever you're at listening to the podcast, sit down and write out what you imagine this movie would be, guarantee you, beat for beat, you could probably write this film in advance before seeing it. Nothing in this film is surprising in any way, shape, or form. No character changes. Nobody has any revelations. Nobody alters their behavior in any way Mm-mm. from the beginning to the end.
Mm. Yeah. And
that's disappointing.
Yeah. Now, like I said, I'd agree with the humans. Now, I will say the one thing I was intrigued with, the facial expressions of the monkeys.
The CG artists outperformed every actor in this film.
100%.
120%.
Because you could sit there. I mean, there was so much emotion in these apes' faces, especially Caesar and his kids. Now, okay, a quick side note here. What's the actor's name that played Rhodey in Iron Man 3? He also, the Iron Patriot.
Don Cheadle,
that's his name.
Mm-hmm.
The son. Okay, now did you ever see the movie Hotel Rwanda?
No, I didn't see that.
Oh, all throughout the movie, Don Cheadle has got this look of disbelief on his face, you know, because it's about...
the tragedy with the Tootsies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the killing of their own kind and all this. Yeah. Basically genocide. And he's got, throughout that movie, he's got this whole look of disbelief and sadness, and it's one of the best performances I ever saw Don Cheadle in. All right. Now, the reason I bring that up is the son of Caesar, which I think they just called him Blue Eyes, he had that same look of disbelief, sadness, and horror throughout the whole movie, and it was just, it's like Don Cheadle couldn't have pulled that off any better. It was amazing.
It was really quite good, and Andy Serkis once again proves that even covered completely by computer-generated graphics, he's an amazingly talented actor when it comes to movement and vocal work and facial work, because I assume they did the blue dots all over his face and they captured his performance.
What I understand it to be, and that's...
But he deserves an amazing amount of praise for his work, for his body of work, in my opinion, because he's an amazingly talented actor and clearly worlds above everybody else in this film.
Now, what else was he in? I know Andy Serkis just from this film right now.
He was Gollum in Lord of the Rings.
Well, I was going to say.
He was in King Kong, a couple Peter Jackson films. Well, it escapes me. He's done quite a few movies.
Okay. Well, that explains it, because I said the only other thing I can think of CGI, that type of acting, was Gollum from Lord of the Rings. And I was like, that's the only thing I can compare this to, because the way like you said, wearing the dots on the face and the facial expression then captured on the CGI. Yeah, that's what I got. So, okay, it makes sense now.
Honestly, the Academy really needs to consider his performances when selecting people to honor at the end of the year with Oscars, because he truly, he's a unique talent. He and another, Doug Jones, does a lot of motion capture and a lot of special effects makeup work.
Right.
And those guys, those kind of guys, they don't get enough kudos, because they have to, they have a lot more challenges than just your average actor.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll tell you what, I mean, not just him, but the other actors doing the other faces, I don't know how many other actors they had to do that face with. There were a lot of stock characters in there, but there were some that they saw facial expressions. All those guys deserve some sort of
the
kudos.
Antagonist, Koba.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the way their faces, I mean, like Koba, for example, he's a really evil looking, he's got scars from when the humans were testing on him and stuff, and he went from that horrible looking thing into a comedic role for one of the scenes.
Yeah.
And it's like, that was a total change, but it was still the same face, you could tell.
Well, and he's also, he's not just an antagonistic or an evil character, he's tragic. I mean, he's extremely tragic, and you can relate to his suffering and what he's seen. Which makes his motivation understandable. Not something you can say about the entire cast.
Right. And that's the thing. I'll tell you, that is what, I think that is what kept me in that movie, was just watching these guys act the crap out of this CGI, you know?
Just the first, all right, if you just took the first two sections of the movie, the first section is all apes. No dialogue. It's all done with sign language, some grunt, you know, grunting and nonverbal kind of work. It was incredibly involving and moving and absolutely 100% clear. You could understand everything that was going on, and it was really engaging. Then the humans showed up and you got nothing but exposition. I guarantee you, every scene with a human, they're either talking about what just happened, what is happening, or what's going to happen.
Especially every scene with Gary Oldman.
Oh dear God.
He was like Basil Exposition, you know.
That guy, I gotta say, that guy was cashing a check for this movie. He was phoning it in.
Yeah. I would agree with that 100%. And even the doctor, Malcolm, I think was the character's name, even him is like, you could predict every word he was gonna say. Everything.
Yeah, nothing surprising in any way, shape, or form.
And like you said, the humans. No. Now, I got to ask you.
Yeah.
At one point during the movie, or actually is right when they entered the colony of the humans, you started laughing. What was that?
Okay. It was actually it was shortly after they got there. They were talking about turning on the power, and they were sitting in the forest, and one of the guys said, yeah, what's really scary about these apes is they don't need power and lights. I'm like, no, you fool. What's scary is they're giant fucking apes on horseback with spears. That's terrifying. Well, they don't need power and lights. That's not scary.
Good point.
That was one of the funniest moments in the film. I'm like, you are clearly a idiot. I'm sorry. I know this is a family podcast, so excuse my language. Gil will have to bleep that out.
I got the beep.
Good, good. But seriously, right there in a nutshell is the writing of this film. It's poor.
Mm-hmm.
It's really poor, generally. Unless you're an ape, and then it's interesting.
Yeah, and if they could, I tell you what, if they could have taken that movie and cut down, made the humans not talk, we could have had a movie. I mean, you know, in the original Planet of the Apes movies, the humans couldn't talk.
That's true.
Maybe that's why, because the dialogue was so bad. So,
and can you, I just got to say, is there no human that knows what sign language looks like?
I know.
Because the apes are all clearly communicating in sign language,
mm-hmm.
and yet everybody's like, they're animals. They don't know how to communicate. They're not talking. Like, what are you talking about? They're signing to each other.
Yeah.
They're clearly talking, even if they're not using their mouths. They are talking.
And then when Caesar says, go, then they all get shocked, like, oh my God, he talks.
Oh my God, they understand things. Whatever. Even if none of them knew how to sign or knew how to use American Sign Language,
right,
you would recognize it when you saw it.
Right. I mean,
I don't speak sign language, but if I see two people talking in sign language, I know they're talking. They're not having some sort of conniption fit.
Yeah. And now, one thing I got to add is that was a really nice touch in the showing that how they communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other aspect is the apes, when they did vocalize, when they did say something, it was forced.
Yeah.
And I like that because they didn't just make them talk.
It was clearly foreign to them.
Right. Yeah. It was something they had to do in front of the humans to make the humans understand. Because apparently humans don't understand sign language.
Evidently, nobody's left that is deaf.
Yeah, exactly. So, hey, they died off. Maybe that was part of it.
I mean, and also, the other thing, I do remember what you're referring to, why I laughed.
Okay.
Because earlier, one ape says to another, do you think there are any humans out there? I don't know. It's been years since we saw the last two.
Oh, yeah.
No idea. Oh, by the way, a very brief drive and a half-hour walk away, there are thousands of them.
Stuck in that room.
Who have no idea that a brief drive and a half-hour walk away are thousands of apes. Neither of these huge civilizations has a clue that practically a stone's throw away is another huge civilization.
Yeah, I'd like to have that
explanation. Apparently for years have been living near each other and have no idea.
Ten years.
And have no clue that the other one's there.
Okay, so there's a little bad writing there.
Thinking that's probably not how things work.
Yeah, I would think so. Now, I wonder also on the aspect of that bringing up that 10 years, the 10-year difference between them, this dam, they go to fix the dam, kind of a spoiler here for you folks, mm-hmm. they go to fix a dam where the apes live, and this is going to bring power. They bring up the power, and all of a sudden, lights come on.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wouldn't there be some breakers thrown or something? That,
I would think there probably would be. Yeah,
so, there's a little bit of, again, suspend your belief.
No, don't suspend it. Hang it in your closet and leave it there.
So, I was expecting to see, like, sparks fly and stuff like that. But, anyway, it's been 10 years. But, the one thing that'll make this, that pulls this movie out of this rut is the facial acting by the lead monkeys, or the lead apes. Mm-hmm. I guess it's not good to call them monkeys.
Racist.
So, the lead ape, but yeah, absolutely, that's 100%, that's a thing.
Apist? You're an apist.
Simian, or simiest, or something, I don't know.
There's a word there somewhere.
But, I think that's the one thing that pulls this off, and that's the one thing I enjoyed the most, is every scene where their apes were doing something.
I found the apes society fascinating. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really interesting. And I'll give the writers some credit. It was interesting to see that the ape society was organized and mm-hmm. structured, and the human society was clearly not.
Yeah. Well, it's been 10 years without power, so. And that's scary.
Yeah. I don't know. I say again, this movie was just way too long.
Yeah.
But yet not long enough to tell the story that it needed to tell.
It
didn't have enough time. There was a lot there that needed to be covered. And so I feel for the writers. They had a lot to pack in there, but they just really didn't do it.
So before Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, they should have had a Dusk of the Planet of the Apes.
It might have helped.
It might have helped. Okay. Mm-hmm. I wonder what the next one would be called, because, I mean, they've already had Battle for the Planet of the Apes, but that was called Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And they're not really naming them like they are did the original movies, but it should be interesting, because there's a... the way this one ends, it's still kind of a cliffhanger according to this story. And I'm kind of curious. It makes you wonder what's going to happen next. So
I guarantee you, you know what's going to happen next. Guaranteed.
I don't want to do spoilers. So, well, that was, again, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And as you saw posted on my Facebook, I saw it with Super Critic Tim. And
I can tell by my flowy cape.
That's exactly right. We need to get you one of those. So
I would wear one of those.
Capes are cool.
Capes are cool. Hey, I got to say, I'll do Gil's job for him here and plug the Eagle Theater.
Oh, yeah.
In Robinson. This is my first time here, guys. And I've got to say, it's pretty sweet. This is, I had no idea. Driving by and looking at the building, I didn't really expect very much, to be perfectly frank. I was like, oh, boy, I'm going to go see a movie theater in a barn. This is going to be great. But this place is pretty sweet. The auditorium was really well laid out. Mm-hmm. I like the way the theater looks. The staff was really super friendly.
We even got butterscotch.
They even gave us butterscotch candies on the way out. That was pretty nice.
See,
A cute girl liked my shirt, so hey.
Oh, that's right. You're wearing the...
the Fallout.
Fallout, shirt. Yeah.
Nuka-Cola.
Nuka-Cola, that's it. So, yeah, although in the restaurant we went to, the guy said, called it a Coca-Cola.
He wasn't a cute girl, so it didn't matter.
It didn't matter, yeah. So, see, yeah, good thing. But yeah, that was the nerds reign supreme here at... the Eagle Theater, and like I said, I haven't been wrong. This is a nice theater. I wish we'd have been in a room, one of the auditoriums with the full surround sound.
Yeah, they need to look into fixing that.
Yeah, and I think that's the only one that doesn't have surround sound. But then again, this thing has been on for a while, and I think this is the last week of Battle or Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. So
I'm used to being behind.
Yeah, and I had to drag Tim to. Like I said, I couldn't get him to go to Transformers, but
not on
maybe next
life.
Time.
I love you, Gil, dearly to my heart. But you'll never get me to see Transformers with you.
Maybe next time we'll have a good sci-fi and I'll trick you. So anyway,
it's a Woody Allen film, Tim. You'll love it.
Yeah, exactly. So
bom, 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 bom. What the hell is this?
You notice that in the Turtles trailer, there was that same Michael Bay sound. Did you know a couple of those? That was weird. All right. Well, tell you what, Tim, thanks for joining me.
It's good to be here.
It was, you know, we've been missing you on the podcast.
I've missed you guys too.
And you had to come up here and break away from all your duties and things that you're doing that are in the real world and nerd out for a little bit. So thanks for joining me. This is fun.
It's good to be here. Nerd Up Podcast.
Well, so that's what it was. Tim and I actually had fun, Eric. I will tell you, we went out to dinner before the movie. And as you heard on Tim's review, I didn't have to do a praise for the Eagle Theater like I usually do because of how wonderful it is. Tim actually was, in fact, walking into the theater, he goes, Gil, you're right. This is a cool theater. Not what you expect in a little town like here. Real quick here, I just want to say there's a movie out there you need to avoid at all costs. Don't even see it when it comes out on DVD. If it's on TV, maybe. Tammy. That was the biggest waste of my time I've ever had. Melissa McCarthy, funny woman, but all the funny stuff is in the trailers of this movie. If you watch the trailers, you don't need to see the movie because that's all the funny stuff. The rest of it, they try to... I mean, and they got some great actors in this movie, Eric. They've got Dan Aykroyd. You got Susan Sarandon. You got Kathy Bates. And, of course, Melissa McCarthy. But, oh, my gosh, they just, that was the one first movie in a long time that I've sat through, and I got about halfway through. I was like, isn't this over yet? It was.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, because it was actually written and directed by McCarthy and her husband,
yeah.
who's also in it and directed it, Ben Falcone, who's from Southern Illinois.
I didn't know that.
He did a lot of plays at Johnny Logan.
Mm-hmm.
His father is Steve Falcone, and he still lives down here. And he comes to a lot of the shows I do at the stage company, and very super, super nice guy. And so, you know, I was I was really hoping that this would do well because this was their kind of pet project that they did together. So sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I think what they—if you're either going to go for a comedy or a drama—and when you try to mix the two, that's where the trouble can begin. You're going to get one or the other, and they try. To me, the drama just didn't work in this. They had a great idea, but it just didn't work. And even the comedy bits, like I said, I saw them all in the previews or in the, you know, in the trailers, and that's all I needed to see. I just walked out of that, and I was hoping for the best. I went in there thinking this is going to be a really funny movie, but nope, not. Anyway, well, let's move on to television. Eric, you and I both watched series premiere, actually, of The Strain. Guillermo del Toro and Chuck Hogan wrote the books, and now they've got a TV series, and I think they're doing, I mean, just with the premiere episode, it looks like they're following it along perfectly.
Yeah, actually, and Del Toro directed the first episode.
Yeah.
I don't know how many other episodes he's going to direct in the series. Hopefully, quite a few, I'm hoping. But, you know, there may be other directors that are going to, maybe they're going to continue in the same style. I hope they do.
Yeah, I hope so, too. Yeah, but now the thing is, I will say this about the movie. They've introduced, I cannot think of the character's name. The older man, kind of like a Van Helsing type character. They've introduced him a little bit earlier in the series than they did in the books.
Yeah.
It works, though. It works the way they did it. They haven't yet got to my exterminator guy yet, but I saw in the previews of what's coming up that they'll be getting to him soon. He's my guy in the story. So, Eric, what do you think of The Strain?
All right. Well, I'm very, very impressed. I think, you know, other than what you said about the old man being introduced a bit earlier, it seems to be, and it has been a while since I read the book, but it does seem like they're following pretty closely to the structure of the book. I don't know if I could say verbatim because it's been so long since I read the book, but, you know, every scene that came on, I was like, yeah, I remember this came next, you know, and everything's pretty much happening as I remember it in my mind's eye reading the book. You know, of course, it's you know, different actors, and so their delivery or their personalities are, you know, slightly different than what I may have interpreted when I read the book, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. In fact, I kind of like the main guy, the CDC guy. I can't remember the character's name, but
Ephraim.
Ephraim, yes. He reminds me a little bit of Ted Raimi. Do you know who Ted Raimi is?
No.
He's Sam Raimi's brother. He's
right.
Been in almost, most of Sam Raimi's movies.
Was he the one that played Joxer in Xena?
I didn't watch Xena, but no. you would know him if you saw him
because
he's in everything. He was in Sequest. I remember that.
Okay.
And Candyman. Anyway, he just kind of reminds me of him for some reason, and I like Ted Raimi, so that's a plus.
Okay.
His assistant, even though we don't see a whole lot of her, is, you know, but she, I remember her being pretty, a fairly important character in the novel.
Yeah.
I like her character, what I've seen of her so far. And then, of course, they got Sean Astin to play his other assistant.
Yeah, that's what kind of surprised me.
Yeah, that's kind of,
I just, actually, I didn't see, yeah, I didn't see him in the role, actually, when reading the book. So I was like, oh, well, he works, so.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm liking all the casting so far. They cast Leslie Hope as the attorney. You don't see much of her or the surviving passengers yet, but, of course, they're going to be very significant in coming episodes. Here's the thing. I thought it was a miniseries. I thought it was just going to be, like, 12 episodes or less, but this is a full series. And as far as I know, I don't know if they're going to be doing, you know, one book per season or how they're going to do this. But I did read some, you know, I posted my opinion on Facebook, and some of my friends were like, you know, had read the book, and they're like, they were saying, well, it's moving too slowly for me. Yeah. That's not the case for me. I like the pace that it's going at, and I like the fact that they're taking time to develop characters, and that it's not they're not trying to squeeze us all into a miniseries, that they're letting this take its time, and I think it's going to wind up feeling more epic in the end if you take your time to build everything up.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I don't have a problem with the pacing at all. In fact, I'm loving it because it's really building suspense through the whole series.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like Stephen King says that, you know, if you don't care about the characters, then you're not going to care when they get killed off or when they're in jeopardy.
Exactly.
You know, and that's the thing about Stephen King's writing that some people complain about is that, you know, they're like, oh, it takes so long for anything to happen. And yes, it does, but it always pays off. And it's and by the time something does happen, you feel like you've lived in these characters' shoes and like they're, you know, like you know them intimately. So, you know, it just ratchets up the tension all that more when you care that much about the characters.
I kind of knew that it was going to be a series. I didn't think miniseries. I was thinking it's actually a summertime series, at least. And I'm hoping they do carry on with it, carrying on each book as a new season, because they got at least 3 seasons out of it. That'll be good. And especially if they, again, develop my favorite character really well, then I'll be stuck in it anyway. So just from the first premiere episode, I'm a fan. I'll be watching it.
Yeah, and I mean, this is on FX, so you know, if anyone's listening to this podcast and they missed that first episode, FX tends to run things many times, and if you miss it on repeats, you know, most cable stations and DirecTV have I believe that FX has a on demand.
Yeah,
so
they
I'm
do.
Sure
they
you
do.
Can Yeah, I'm sure you can watch this on demand, but definitely recommend it if you're, you know, if you like horror and genre stuff, and if you're just a fan of Guillermo del Toro, you really got to see this.
Yeah, well, and plus it's bringing vampires back to the people, the vicious animals that they are in the first place. They're not sparkly.
No, there are no sparkly vampires in this series. Yeah. Thank God.
Yeah, I'm ready for it. And yeah, by the way, FX does have an on demand channel, because that's how I used to rewatch my Archer episodes, because I was laughing so hard I had to rewatch them. So.
Uh-huh.
All right, you got another TV show you want to definitely not
Speaking
praise.
Of lame vampires. Nice transition.
Yeah.
I should bring up that I am watching right now the final season of True Blood.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing: as I started watching True Blood when it premiered on HBO several years ago, and I liked it. At least the first 3 seasons. It was a very different take. It was definitely soap opera-ish, but I liked a lot of the characters, although Sookie Stackhouse was not one of them. I've never liked Sookie. I've always found her to be annoying, shrill, judgmental, spoiled, just like, I just don't like that character at all. But there were other characters in the series that I did like a lot. I liked her friend Tara. I liked Bill Compton, the vampire, at least, up until like season 4, I think, when they just completely arbitrarily, oh, now, you know, Bill the vampire is going to be a bad guy, or now he's going to be, you know, totally evil. And it's just, that's the very crux of what went wrong with this series after about the 3rd season, is the writers were completely inconsistent with the characterization, and they would just, you know, if they would write the characters' motivations to suit what they wanted to happen in the story, and that is that's a formula for failure every single time. Now, there are some people that are still with the series, and they're non-critical, and they love everything that the series has done. I'm not one of them, and the only reason that I'm still watching this is it is the final season, and I'm like, well, I've watched it this long, I should, you know, it's only a few more episodes, I'll watch it through to the end. But after the season opener, if it wasn't the final season, I would have quit right then and there. The first episode of this season was just so ridiculous, so just insulting to the fans. There's a major character that I really liked who dies, they don't even give this character a decent death. It happens off screen, and someone's like, oh, so-and-so's dead. Oh, gee, that sucks. And that's about it.
All right.
I mean, this is a major character.
All right, you got me curious. You got to, spoiler or not, who was it that died?
Okay, if you don't want to know, skip ahead about 10 or 15 seconds.
Okay.
It's Tara.
Okay.
And it's just the way they handled the death, it was horrible. And just, it's just, like, it's not even a footnote. Meanwhile, they have characters like Terry, who's, I don't know if you know, remember Terry.
Yeah.
Terry was husband to
Redhead Arlene. Lady.
Right. And not a character that I ever really particularly cared for, and I can't imagine most people did, and he was a second-tier character at best. When he died, they did an entire episode on his funeral. An mm-hmm. entire episode. I'm not exaggerating.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, what's the point here? He's
mm-hmm.
dead. Let him go. You know, he wasn't an important character anyway. And now this major character's dead, and it's just like, oh, so-and-so's dead. Oh, well. And it's just, I'm like, why are you doing this? Why, you know, if you were going to do this, why not do it at the end of last season? Why wait till like the first, it literally happened in the first 10 minutes of the first episode of the new season.
Right.
And it's just, I don't know. These people are on drugs, the people that are writing this series.
Well,
and not good drugs either.
I got to tell you, I officially stopped after the first season. I tried back for the second just to see if they're going to correct their errors. Actually, the first episode of the second season is where I stopped, and then I tuned in a couple more times. I'm like, no, they ruined it. But they totally went away from where the books were. Charlaine Harris wrote actually a pretty good series, and they just totally have said, Charlaine Harris, you don't matter. So it's honestly, it's almost on, and I'll bring it up again, it's almost on the level of them saying, hey, here's a book. Let's turn it into Lawnmower Man. So it's almost that far from the stories. Yeah, I they lost me a long time ago. So
yeah, I like some of what they've done over the years, over the few years that the show's been on the air, and there's been some high points, and there's been some really, really, really low points.
Yeah.
But in the last couple of seasons, it's been about, you know, 80% low points.
Can't win them all, I guess. But at least we got The Strain. We're good with that at Vampire Slick. All right, let's move on to some comic books real quick. We're almost going to be done with the podcast here pretty soon, Eric. But it's been a rough week for comic book characters. Oh, my gosh. Archie, he's going to die in a new issue. He's going to take a bullet for a gay friend. Well, I think actually Garfield's going to chase a laser pointer into a Chinese restaurant, too. I think that's also in the works. But that's just me. But no, anyway, Archie's publisher, John Goldwater, he says that Archie dies in a way that epitomizes Americans. So when he said that, I'm thinking, what, all on a couch with Cheeto crumbs all over me? I mean, come on. But no, he's taking a bullet, defending gay rights, taking a bullet for a gay friend, but still, Archie's going to die. Doesn't matter how he really dies, they're finally, and I actually read that the sales have been down over the years, and they just barely kept it running. They even put Kiss in the Archie comics, the rock band Kiss, and that still couldn't bring him back up, so they're just going to kill him off. But I kind of like the way he goes out, honestly. I think that's a good thing. That's good old Riverdale High for you. So, yeah, Archie Comics, Archie's dying. They're going to be ending Archie, which I think it's run its course. Riverdale High does not fit in with today's youth anyway. Let's see here. Moving on to Marvel Comics. They announced two big, huge changes in their characters. But, honestly, it's not surprising. Like, first of all, Marvel Comics are changing the gender of one of the most popular characters they've got, Thor, from a man to a woman. Thor will be female now. I'm thinking they did the move because, you know, they'll attract new readers, of course. Plus, they can pay the female 30% less.
Oh.
Okay, maybe not. Yeah, all jokes aside, you know, sex change does kind of make sense for Thor. Because Thor, do you know it's German for Bruce Jenner?
Now, I read was that it said something about Thor can no longer pick up his hammer.
Yep, and that's...
So that, another character's taking over as Thor.
Well, see, and that's the thing. They've done this before. There's been several times before. Captain America has been one of them, which we'll talk about him here in a second. He's been one of them that has been able to pick up Mjolnir, and Thor lost his privilege. And if you'll notice, if you remember in the first movie, that throughout first part of the movie, he lost Mjolnir because he used it in anger or something like that. And,
right.
You know, and so that's basically what's going to happen is that he's going to do something. It's going to lose, you know, ownership, and a female will be able to do it. And a female has done it before. There is actually two DC Comics crossovers with Thor. One of them was Wonder Woman, and she was worthy of Mjolnir, and she wielded Mjolnir for a while. And another one, Superman did. So if you go back into Thor, so yeah, it's not unusual, but it's just I think it's a strange that they made, because they've made these changes a little bit before, except now they just made a big deal out of it. So it's interesting. And actually, I think with the new female Thor, her new power is going to be the silent treatment.
The cold shoulder.
Yes. Or and well, she will have one weakness. She will not be able to pick out a decent movie. Let's see.
Oh.
People don't realize this, but like I said, Thor has, you know, the hero Thor, he's been around in comics since the Rolling Stones have been in diapers. So, oh wait, hold on. They're in diapers now, so never mind. That's not a good. That's not a good comparison. Never mind. But no, Thor's been around for a while, and it's always been the same incarnation. But there have been other people been able to pick up Mjolnir, so it's not unusual. It's going to be fun, I think, and I don't think it'll last long though. I think eventually he will get his hammer back. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. And finally, now this one again, I don't see any problem with this at whatsoever. Marvel Comics, they revealed that Captain America will be black. Now, the reason they announced it that way, I don't know. All they could have done was said Sam Wilson has taken over the reins of Captain America. I mean, it's not there. This is the seventh incarnation of Captain America. Steve Rogers has not always been Captain America. In fact, recently Bucky has been Captain America. So it's not unusual, but Sam Wilson, you know, the Falcon, if you saw the Captain America movie, he's going to be the new Captain America. So basically, Captain America black, Thor becomes a woman, Archie gets shot for gay rights. You know, I think next Hulk is going to go into anger management. They're shaking up the world. Now, I got to ask, though, on Thor, does that make him an X-Men now? You know, X-Men? No, I'm reaching for that one, wasn't I? So, but,
yeah.
So what do you think, Eric? I mean, okay, Archie dying, I can see that one because the sales have been down.
Yeah, I think maybe I might have read an Archie comic or two when I was very young. When I was reading Richie Rich comics.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. When I think of comic books, I mean, sure, the word comic is in that, but it's only superheroes that I pick up. I have never been a Archie reader. But it is a kind of sad to see that go away because he's been around for eons as well. So,
I never thought of Archie's as being a social issue type comic.
Yeah.
It always was kind of, you know, a comic book.
Yeah.
In my memory, and just kind of shticky, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, very.
So this seems like a very strange decision, unless maybe in the intervening years, maybe Archie has developed into a serious character. I don't know.
No.
But it's, you know, no?
No. Well, see, they did introduce the gay character, and they made a big deal of that when they did introduce this. I can't remember his name now, but they made a big deal out of it. I think they tried to keep up with the times, but they've just not been able to pull it off. And I think that's why. Right. So they're saying, hey, we'll send them out with a bang, you know, something to talk about. But
now, Thor, I never read any Thor comics, and I always kind of, I didn't even take Thor seriously as a character until I saw the first Thor movie. And and when I went and see it, I was like very weary. I very much doubted that they were going to make me be able to take this character seriously. And they did. I mean,
yeah,
much to the credit of Kenneth Branagh, but also Chris Hemsworth, you know, and I loved the movie. I walked out and I was like, okay, I'm a Thor fan now, you know?
Yeah.
So I only really know him from the movies. And, you know, I mean, if they want to make the character, and I'm curious how, you know, this is all happening in the comic books, how and when it's going to affect the Marvel films. But, you know, I wouldn't have any problem. I mean, what was Lady Sith? Mm-hmm. Sith was you know, awesome when I saw her. And I still haven't seen the second Thor movie, but I did see her in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Uh-huh.
And I do have the second Thor movie. I just haven't gotten around to watching it yet. But I love that character. And, I mean, you know, she's this strong female who kicks lots of ass. And,
yeah.
I mean, I guess that. And it seems kind of strange that they might not have Lady Sif be Thor since she's already in the story. But I don't know. Like I said, I didn't read the comic, so maybe that wouldn't work.
We'll have to see. I mean, honestly, like I said, if you pay attention to the first movie, you see Odin whisper to the hammer that whoever is worthy, or whatever the line is, whoever's worthy of the power of Mjolnir shall wield it. Again, that's showing that it's not, and it's just like Batman without his utility belt. You know, Thor is nothing without his Mjolnir. I mean, he can't do anything
right
without it. So I could see that it's not a big deal. A lot of people are saying that they're just doing this for ratings and for the comics or something, but I don't think it's going to affect the movies at all. I don't think they're going to work that storyline into it. And Captain America being black, again, it's just another one of those issues where they're just bringing it out. Like I said, they've changed Captain America many times. Now all of a sudden Sam Wilson, you know, the Falcon, is taking over the costume. And it's like, to me, no big deal, but they're thinking it's the publicity angle that they're going with. So otherwise, either that or they're trying to get him to marry a Kardashian. I'm not sure which.
Now, the actor that plays Steve Rogers, I can't remember his name offhand. I keep hearing or reading rumors that he's walking away from the role.
Oh.
Obviously, it's not going to be till after
Avengers 2.
The second Avengers movie. Yeah. And I think maybe he might even have already committed to the next Captain America movie after that. But I keep these rumors keep popping up, so I have to think that maybe there's something to it. And like you said, in the comic book history, Captain America has been several different people. I have to wonder, with the introduction of the Winter Soldier, if maybe, and you know, and given the way that the film ended, that maybe they're gearing up Bucky to be the next Captain America.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I think that's the case because I've heard those rumors too, and I'm like thinking, well, who are they going to get to replace him? Well, they just did. Then in line, Sam Wilson, Falcon coming up next. I mean, it's not unusual. I think the thing is Marvel's just trying to seek out some hype. This to get their comic book sales up.
Yeah, I just hope. I mean, you know, I don't know much about the actor that played Bucky.
Yeah,
but you know, I mean, obviously, we all are very, very approving of the guy that plays Steve Rogers, and he's just he's perfectly cast in this role. So whoever does play the next Captain America is going to have some big shoes to fill.
Yeah, that's true. Because he sold us as both Steve Rogers and Captain America. So
yeah.
Well, like I said, I think a lot of it is just hype from the Marvel Comics trying to get some more comic book sales out. It's comic books. They can always change the continuity anytime they want.
Right. Well, it's just like killing Superman and killing Peter Parker. And it's just, it just, to me, it reeks of, oh, we're running out of ideas. What can we do to sell issues? You know?
Yeah. And I can guarantee you the line is going to come up. If not, Marvel, feel free to use this, where Captain America comes back, Steve Rogers comes back. And Sam Wilson says, I was just holding this for you. And he gives him a shield. So I can see that now. But, yeah, we'll see. To me, it doesn't shake me up. Doesn't make me, I'm totally indifferent towards it because it's comic books. And I'm going to read them either way. Except for Archie, because they're going to kill him. I'm not going to read him anymore. Well, I didn't read him anymore, or didn't read him at all. So, but anyway, and one final thing before we close out the podcast, Eric. I got last podcast, I talked about the John Waters book, Carsick, about him hitchhiking across the U.S. Well, I'm almost done with it now. And remember I talked about how wonderful his experience was, especially the first part that got his movie funded?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, come to find out, their book is broken down into three sections. First one is good rides, second one is bad rides, and the third and final section is real rides. So the first two segments are just his fantasy, his imagination. Okay. And let me tell you, they were good. The bad rides were creepy as, I mean, and you know how John Waters can get creepy. But the real rides are actually, they're actually kind of fun after reading those two from his imagination. So it's a good book, Carsick by John Waters, really good and narrated by him. I just wanted to touch up on that after last time around.
While I'm thinking about it, that ties in with the books thing. Amazon has announced that they're toying with the idea, I don't know if it's official yet, of doing basically all you can consume ebooks and audiobooks.
Yeah, I saw that.
A monthly charge of like $19.99.
I saw it was $9.99. So,
but, maybe it was $9.99.
Yeah.
I could be right. But I mean, I'm not someone that I don't get to read as much as I would like because I have so many distractions: video games, Blu-ray movies, TV shows.
Yeah.
I don't get to read nearly as much as I would like. So this probably wouldn't be ideal for me. But I know a lot of people. Well, you. For instance, you go through a lot of books.
Mm-hmm.
This might be a nice appealing option, but it did it stood out to me. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. People that go through a lot of books quickly, would be able to really take advantage of that.
Yeah, and I like the idea. I mean, although I will tell you that one group of people will not like it. That's your local library. This is going to really bring some detrimental experiences to the local library because, I mean, I like the idea, although I will tell you that my Kindle is full of books right now that I'm having a hard time finding a time to get to all of them. And and audiobooks getting to be the same way. I don't know if I could take advantage of this until I get caught up. But it does. Yeah, right. It sounds like a really good idea for any avid reader or audiobook listener. It's a good way to fund your reading habit monthly.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people like to rag on Amazon as wanting to rule the world. They do the same thing with Google, but both of those companies, they keep putting out products that I like.
Yeah,
they've done right by me. They haven't they haven't done anything shysterish or ripped me off in any way. As long as they deliver on their promises, I'm all about these guys. I mean, I still like to patronize my local businesses, but I live out in BFE, and there aren't a lot of mom and pop businesses that sell items that I'm looking for or need. But when I do, I try to go to those places.
Right, exactly.
But things like Amazon are a godsend for someone that lives in a rural area because you have access to everything, and the 2-day shipping through Prime is just absolutely amazing. I more than paid for my membership With all the two-day shipping that I've gotten from these guys. So,
yeah,
there's my testimonial.
All right, well, I'll tell you what, let's close out this podcast. Then I guess we'll close out the podcast this time around. I'm Gil T. Wilson. You can reach me on Twitter at Gil Wilson. That's G-I-L-W-I-L-S-O-N. And also, don't forget, you can reach the Nerd Up Podcast at Nerd Up Podcast on Twitter.
This is Eric Billingsley, and you can reach me at Eric Bill, E-R-I-C-B-I-L-L.
And, oh, I got to point out, don't forget, leave us a voicemail on the webpage. It's nerduppodcast.blogspot.com. A little icon you can click, record an audio message for us, and we'll feature you on one of the upcoming podcasts for sure. Even if it's bad things to say, we don't mind. All right, well, that's it for the Nerd Up Podcast this time around. I'm Gil T. Wilson once again, and thank you. Stay nerdy.
Stay nerdy.
Nerd Up Podcast.
www.gilwilson.com.
If you need quality voice work for your radio commercials, audio for TV commercials, or maybe just for that message on hold for your business, you need to check out
www.gilwilson.com.
G-I-L-W-I-L-S-O-N.com. www.gilwilson.com. Check it out. It's quirky. It's fun. It's innovative.